Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
If ever there was a week we could use a little perspective, this week might be that one. It's the challenge this week for the Mincing Rascals. Hi, it's John Williams. Thanks for finding us. Share us with your friends, please. I always ask you to do that. I really want you to do that. Give us a good rating if you can. If, by the way, your knee hurts during this podcast, I want you to go to the Joint Relief Institute's website. They're our sponsor. Visit jointreliefinstitute.com. I'll give you their phone number in a second. It's the same phone number for either of their two locations in Orland Park or Oak Brook. They use digital imaging to see where your knee has failed you over the years, and then they put a joint lubricant into that exact spot. I've gone there a couple of times. I've had the treatments. It's amazing. They say, where's your knee hurt? I go, it's right there. They put this machine on, and suddenly you and they see the literal pieces of your knee. And I see this substance flowing into the spot where the tissue was, and I didn't realize that they were actually working on my knee at that time. It was that painless. I'm like, hokey smokes, that's me. And then you watch the fluid go to the exact spot where the tissue's been compromised. They take a lot of pride in this process. I'm telling you, it's a fast, pain-free procedure that your insurance almost surely pays for. And the number to call is 708-888-0000. That's jointreliefinstitute.com. And the number is 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. Today is Thursday. It's February 27th, 2020. It's 12:44 in the afternoon. Hi, this is John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast recorded at the studios of WGN Radio. Email the Rascals, care of John Williams at WGNradio.com.
I'm Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio newsroom and other stuff.
Justin Kaufman, evenings at WGN Radio.
Austin Berg, Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute.
Lisa Donovan with the Chicago Tribune all day, but I come out, my newsletter comes out in the afternoon. Spin Politics newsletter, that is.
Sign up for it.
Eric Zorn is not here today, so Lisa in the Tribune seat has decided to expand her introduction, but you didn't do...
Sorry about
it
that.
It wasn't a Zorn-like introduction, though, was it? It wasn't...
No. Smarmy?
He will always...
He listens.
The adjective of the week.
I know.
Yeah. The story of the week, and then...
Skeleton-ringed... reporter.
Skeleton ring came up in the news this week? Or she's wearing a skeleton ring.
No, it's a Clada ring.
Oh, Clada.
Yeah, Irish.
Speaking of travel to Europe, today the numbers are 83,000 infected and 2,800 dead in 46 countries are now being reported of coronavirus. The number one is the total number of cases in the United States in which the person had no known contact with any of the risk factors. We now have one person. We don't know how they got it in California. I'm going to Italy in October. Would you all want to come with me? And is this whole story a case of the media making it seem way worse than it is?
I don't know if that's the case or not. We talked about this week. Everyone will always point to the fact that there's more cases of influenza, and that's you know, that's the bigger bug. And
20, in the United States, 29 million flu cases and 17,000 deaths.
My question, and the question for the medical profession, is they keep continuing saying, well, it's coronavirus, is like everything. I mean, you might even not know you have the symptoms. It's fever, it's cough. When you throw out the fact that this has been such a terrible flu season, the numbers are way up. What's stopping you from saying that's coronavirus? They don't know. They don't have the difference between influenza and coronavirus at this point. So how do we know that the extra numbers of thousands of people who said they had the flu didn't actually have something different?
Don't we have some idea of the origin of it from the Wuhan territory and the timing of the origin of
it? It didn't spontaneously erupt here. It will have to have come from China, right?
Sure. But my point is, when I hear people say influenza was much worse, my question is, have yet to come up with a test that says, you know, widespread. So why couldn't it be something misclassified?
Let's live in that world then. Let's say everyone who's got the flu here has coronavirus. we're doing okay.
That's my point.
You're
mean,
that's a great point.
Yeah. I think there. This is such a case of lack of perspective. Even when they throw those numbers out, you know those don't resonate with people. They don't. They go, flu, whatever. But coronavirus, oh my God, we're canceling our trips.
I kind of feel that way because I have a we're doing a family trip to D.C. and I have a family member who has a lung condition, and I'm a little bit worried about it. So we're contacting their doctor to say, hey, what should we do?
Would that family member be susceptible to influenza?
Possibly. We don't know.
But you wouldn't have made that step. You wouldn't.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, they've had their flu shot, but we just want to be sure because of this condition. And so I don't know whether it's an overreaction. I don't know. You heard what Mayor Lightfoot said yesterday. She said she was disappointed in the CDC for their it's not if but when.
Yeah, she was exasperated.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. As I said, we had two cases here in Chicago. Those cases have been dealt with. The people are recovering.
We're not there yet. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
She said she didn't want to scare the people of the city.
Well, I want the medical community to be there.
She said, we've got a plan. We're ready for this.
She's got a tightrope, though, because it scares me that the leaders will be nonchalant or because we have a leader in Washington that likes to say fake news or kind of control the narrative in that way. She has to recognize, yes, you know, perhaps they're ready and it's overblown, but at the same time, recognize the fears of people who live in her city. For her to just go, knock it off, CDC. I don't like that approach.
I don't think she said it that way. She said she was disappointed in sort of this sort of quick, it's not if but when, and we need to be prepared. There was sort of a terseness to it.
I will candidly tell you that I was very disappointed with the comments of the CDC yesterday and members of the Trump administration around coronavirus.
But she did turn it then, though, and said, we are ready.
We are ready.
She did reassure people, we have a plan. Right. We are, you know.
Unlike Trump, who offered sort of, you know, the president, he should have had that news conference. I'm glad that he did that. But on the one hand, he downplays it. And then on the other hand, he's saying his vice president is going to be the coronavirus czar. And so that tells me that on the one hand, don't be worried about it. But like, we're really worried.
It's alternative facts. Both things are true. I think the president didn't say anything that wasn't true. He was looking on the bright side.
Right. We're ready to adapt and we're ready to do whatever we have to.
And the health officials there were going, it's not a matter of if, but a matter of when.
Yeah, I don't think it's been an overreaction at all.
Really?
I think, and especially in the case of something like this, you can't take a static picture of there's been more flu cases than coronavirus cases. It's about the dynamism of how it spreads. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of a pandemic. One day it's not. Like, how do you go bankrupt at first very slowly and then all at once, right? It's the same thing with viruses like that.
Right.
I have one of my close friends, his father and mother-in-law live in Tianjin, which is 700 miles away from Wuhan. They've been inside their apartment for 4 weeks.
Why?
Because of fear of getting the virus.
And was it the government that told them they couldn't come out?
I think it's a combination of the government and then people taking measures themselves. And that's not even in a city where it's especially widespread.
Last night I had someone call in who was in China, I forgot where, but in proximity to Wuhan when this all started. It was an American businessman. He was visiting, I think he was visiting his family who lived there. And he talked about how the fear that was happening in that country, but it was over-sensationalized here in America.
Oh.
But he also mentioned something that he said, when they flew back in the middle of all this, when all of it was going crazy, the Chinese government had doctors and people taking fevers on the trains, the public transportation, when you got it. Here, they got off the plane. Nobody said anything. They walked right out into Chicago, whatever.
You should not be taking at face value the reaction of the press in China. I mean, there's been suppressed reports about the nature of this because it's not in the CCP's interest to have news about this. This happened in the U.S. during World War I. Woodrow Wilson suppressed reports of the flu spreading in the U.S. It became a huge problem. And to your point about the numbers of it, I do agree that nobody understands the numbers. There was some national correspondent, I believe it was for NBC, had a tweet like, well, 98% of people, it's a modest case. Well, scale that up to the entire population, that's 2% of people. That's millions of deaths. You won't die. Someone you know will die if that's the mortality rate that we...
That's the only number we have right now.
But you just gave the mortality rate if everyone in the world contracts the virus.
Not even... Just in the U.S., How many people
we have? 330 million okay, people
what
here.
What are the chances of all of us getting...
No, but a big chunk could. 30, 40, 50%
there's
could.
There's no preventative. Yeah, there's no preventative.
So then, so...
And I don't want to be doomsday. Like, my hope is...
That, when are you going to start?
The summer, the hot weather kills it. Right. The hot weather kills it. You maybe get a vaccine by the fall. But I think if you're going to be paranoid about anything, I'm not a paranoid person. If you're going to be paranoid about any single thing... Something like this maybe is worth overcorrecting for
so
a little bit.
We asked the doctor today. John had a doctor on the show, and I asked him, I said, well, the difference is, because he was saying, you know, look, the flu influenza is much worse right now. And I said, well, isn't the difference that the coronavirus is more deadly? Because that's the only thing I can see that for a reason to be concerned. And he had a great answer to that. He goes, well, it probably is right now, but there are a lot of cases we don't know about.
That number, I would imagine, is going to go down as we test more and more people. We also know that 80% of people who have the virus experience minimal to no symptoms.
So what you're saying is we don't know how many people have the coronavirus altogether, and once we know that bigger number, the death rate would be diluted.
Exactly. Our denominator is going to go way, way, way up.
And so that it might not be all that much more deadly than the influenza.
But it's 2.3% of the known people who have had it have died from it right now. He said that's much higher than the influenza, but that number will go down when we discover, holy cow, all those other people had it, we just didn't test for
it. And they
yet.
Didn't die, yeah.
No.
And we called it the flu. Moving
on. Are you happy about that? Right. If 50 million people like Austin wants get
God.
It... If it does infect a lot of people and then it all plays out, and we go, oh boy, it's a good thing that we were all hot for that subject in February, then I'll eat these words. But I think we're going to look back on this and go, we drove ourselves into hysteria because we have 24-hour news cycles and we have Twitter and we have people who don't like the president and they want to put this on him. I'll tell you what, I think that press conference was not the train wreck I thought it could be. That's how low the bar is for Donald Trump. But I mean, I thought, oh man, if that guy ad-libs it.
Was any of us personally impacted by SARS?
I was not.
H1N1, anyone? No. You know, I mean, so we've been, and again, not to diminish it and not to, you know, I'll stay up and watch the freaky sci-fi movies with you.
Not freaky sci-fi, man. It's about risk. Like Nassim Taleb, one of my favorite authors, he wrote The Black Swan, predicted the 2007 financial crisis. He talks a lot about things like this. And the point is, it's a black swan event. Like, yeah, maybe the last three news cycles about pandemics were junk. But guess what? If the last 50 were junk and one isn't, that's still a major problem. And I think you got to take as many precautions as possible.
Well, and I'm with you on taking the precautions and having government be ready, but I'm just not
so do you think
I'm not afraid of it.
The selling of this story has been entirely responsible then?
Yes, I think so. I think there's the appropriate level of seriousness in talking about it from the federal government. I agree that Trump's press conference could have been much worse. What I worry about is him saying, if I don't keep the markets happy, my reelection is in jeopardy, so I'm not going to be serious about it.
Well, he spun this around to somehow it's the Democrats' fault.
Yeah, I agree with us. That's the problem with all of this, is that somehow this has become politicized.
Absolutely.
In a way that I'm not even sure. The idea of saying that the president's adversaries, political adversaries, are trying to pin this on him. I think what's more accurate is that his tone of being dismissive or possibly trying to be more concerned about the markets than concerned about public health and public safety is where the concern is for his adversaries. I can't think of anyone who would rightfully say the coronavirus is Donald Trump's fault. What are you talking about?
I think
Rush Limbaugh said that.
I think that
he said it's being weaponized.
Said, yeah, right.
Yeah, I know.
I think
but that's
right. There was a
he was wearing a
Medal
of Freedom at the time.
And now the coronavirus, they're trying to lay it at his feet and make him responsible for it, and they're doing irresponsible news reports claiming that the coronavirus is going to destroy the U.S. economy by when? November! Isn't it magical?
I think that they were saying that somehow this Democratic debate, that they were trying to pin it on him, that and some of his aides, some of the pundits, more conservative pundits, were like, look at these Democratic, you know, presidential contenders are trying to pin coronavirus on him. And I watched that mess of a debate, and I guess I didn't hear that part.
Well, they were all talking over each other. Yeah. They were saying it while they were talking over each other.
I want to go back to that.
Raise your hand if you're going to talk, Justin.
And I didn't. The president, I don't think, was asked about this yesterday at the news conference, but he said more than once, he said that the stock market tumble was because of the debate last night.
That's what it was. That's what I was thinking.
And people worried about the Democratic candidates.
Are financial markets overreacting here?
I think the financial markets are very upset when they look at the
Democrat candidate standing on that stage making fools out of themselves. And they say, if we ever have a president like this, but when they look at the statements made by the people standing behind those podiums, I think that has a huge effect. Yeah.
Well, the stock market had dropped 2,000 points before
that,
anyone
yeah.
took the stage. And he seemed to be allowed to get away with that.
Well, I mean, it's a different mixing the sort of the politics and all that other stuff is into governmental business seems to be where he's at. I mean, this is where everybody's at, it feels like.
If a Democrat were president right now, if a different Republican were president right now, would we be where we are right now?
I don't know, but especially economically, like it's a global supply chain issue. If China's shut down, the market's going to fall.
I think that's true. Physiologically and economically, I think we would all be in the same place.
And that translates at the polls. I mean, people vote on the economy. If things are going well, you know, he's counting on that.
But I mean, I understand that.
Good, yeah.
But boy, if ever there were an exception to that rule, right? You get the credit when it goes well, you get the blame when it goes bad. This might be the exception to the rule. Donald Trump didn't have anything to do with this. He has nothing to do with this.
Oh, yeah, I'm not giving anybody
credit. The administration has nothing to do with this.
Yeah. But the problem is, and of course, you're right. You're absolutely right. The problem is that he has ridden the stock market as a barometer of his economy. Mm-hmm. Every chance he's had.
But I mean, if Barack Obama were president, Steve, or if Hillary Clinton were president, they could say, the market's been great because of me. Don't count the market slide of 10% on me because in this case, I have nothing to do with it. I can't fix it.
They could say that, but I'm saying that he, more than other presidents, has been saying, look at the great job I'm doing. Look at the stock market.
That's the indicator.
Right.
And so you're right. The fact that when it's I guess what you got to find out is, does a Trump economy withstand a black swan event? And that's the case here. Because the market has been outrageously successful in the last year. To the point where you talk any investors would say they're waiting for this moment. It could have been a trip and a fall, and it would have been to this point because they didn't feel like it was an accurate assessment of where we were at. And this is it. So the question becomes, is the economy strong?
How much
we'll
do we
find
recover?
Out. Yeah, how much can it withstand a drop like we've seen in the last couple of days? And that's what he should run on. And the fact that, listen, a huge black swan event happened. Look at this. We're still got a strong economy.
We're only down 3% instead of 10.
Right. It would have been worse if it was somebody else.
And I wouldn't necessarily take it for granted that even if the market does drop a little bit and this becomes a bigger problem for American communities, say there's community level spread in the U.S., that's almost like, you know, you're in a war. That advantages the incumbent usually in politics, right? You want a sense of certainty, this kind of like strongman politics.
He'll be the one marshaling the forces
exactly.
to the rescue.
We don't want to change. We don't want to shake things up too much if, you know, things are getting hairy.
Unless it's like Michael Blandick. Right? There's no storm and he doesn't do a good job of cleaning up the snow. Right.
Michael Blandick lost to Jane Byrne as a result of the response to the 1979 snowstorm.
Yeah.
You know, when the woman and man were brought back to Chicago, from Wuhan. Didn't you think the press conference that the city had was really good as a result of that? Didn't you get the feeling that that wasn't an overreaction and by God, these people have their shit together. We will manage this because of these people.
Which was what the mayor was trying to get to.
When the mayor or the president or anybody else talks about our preparedness, I thought that was about the perfect press conference.
The press conference yesterday with the president, I thought it was fine. I agree with you in all the assessments of it not being a train wreck. But even his approach and his tone, when he does go off script and he says beautiful, talented people or whatever it is, you get this vibe that he's not taking it seriously. I will give credit, even though you look at the history of the vice president and what he has done with public health in his state in Indiana, which is not good. His approach to it yesterday when he spoke as the newly appointed czar was exactly what the American people wanted.
As a former governor from the state where the first MERS case emerged in 2014, I know full well the importance of presidential leadership, the importance of administration leadership, and the vital role of partnerships of state and local governments and health authorities.
They want a guy who's going to come in there and say, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. He felt like the public health officials in Chicago on the coronavirus. So now that doesn't at all mean that he has the track record to be the right guy to be the czar. The things that happened in 2015 under his reign.
Southern Indiana,
take
right?
us all the way back to 1984. But the idea being that he had struck the right tone.
Explain that.
There's an HIV outbreak in southern Indiana in 2015. And we're not talking about 1988. Yeah. We're talking about 2015. And it stems back to the leadership and essentially the lack of funding and preparedness and public health, overall public health monies. He caught a bunch of stuff. He doesn't have any interest in that.
And they knew where it was coming. It was coming from needles, right? And there was a big resistance, or it took a long time to get in free needles or replacement needles to help to stop this.
I don't think you've seen too many HIV outbreaks of that magnitude in this country since the 80s.
Right.
And the idea that that happened in 2015, with all everything that's afforded to us and the knowledge and the understanding, that's what scares you. And that's why people are at least on Twitter, are like, what?
When we in the past appointed an Ebola czar, I know Donald Trump was very critical of everything that President Obama, for instance, did whenever he had.
Yes.
And so now they're mining these old tweets of Donald Trump from 6 years ago. I don't see the value in that unless you just want to pile on and say the guy's a hypocrite. Then you get to have that. Everything he said that they were doing wrong is exactly what is happening now.
Take any issue. Like, that's the Trump rule. There's always a tweet. There's always a tweet is the rule, saying the opposite thing.
Yeah.
And there's always some – there are kind of some fanatics out there who – apparently have a ton of money and a ton of time to just sit around and mine for this stuff.
I know.
It's sort of like, wow. What
you guys are good at that. I'll give you that.
Yeah,
but okay. But I also make the argument that Donald Trump ran on the idea that everyone before him sucked and he's the best. And when he gets in and he does contradict himself when he was running and when he wanted to be a politician, even if it was 6 years ago, I think that's valuable. That is currency in the political landscape that we live in. That you look at what President Obama said when he was in 2004. One of the things that they went against Obama in 2008 was something he had said on WBEZ in Chicago in 2001 about reappropriation of wealth, which was a constitutional question that was being thrown around morally. It wasn't a policy procedure. And so that's how it works. And Donald Trump is not immune to that. You cannot say, as a public official, the way the government's doing Ebola is crap, and then when you're the public official, say, no, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
No, you make a good point. Somebody posted, I think we probably saw this, one of the same tweets about Obama letting somebody back in the country, and if that person has Ebola, he ought to resign. And somebody who's critical of the president and resurfacing this tweet put that out there, and then somebody replied, said, what are you talking about? How can you criticize him for this? This means he's going to be on top of this. So, it sort of backfired.
It always works.
Yeah.
Well, this is the same president, though, that said the two Supreme Court justices should recuse themselves from a case in Chicago, an immigration case, on any case going forward that involves Trump or the Trump family, because they've demonstrated their prejudice against him in their dissent on a ruling. You know, that's another one of those things, Steve, where if any other president said that, we'd lose our mind.
Right.
That was a news blip that didn't even register.
Well, that's because he proved years before he won that he doesn't really understand the Constitution.
That's the president saying that the Supreme Court justices should recuse themselves because they disagreed with him in a dissent.
Because
recuse themselves.
And that's the point. He was talking about what Sotomayor said and how terrible it was what she said. She wrote it in a dissent.
And
she wasn't
giving
some firebrand speech.
Yeah.
It was an official dissent to a ruling. And it wasn't an illegitimate one, right? She's worried that the court was taking up too many direct, quote-unquote, emergency appeals from the administration rather than letting these lower courts hash it out and let it take time.
Right.
And that has happened much more. It's happened more in the three Trump years than it did in the 16 Bush-Obama years.
Right. And I think she had mentioned in there that she was concerned about the sort of the politicization of the higher court, of the Supreme Court. And I think that but they have every right to sort of to raise that, to say, you know, I'm concerned about this, and that's what dissents are for, you know, dissenting opinions.
Wait, this president doesn't like dissent? What happened? Where was it?
I'm going to take you guys back to Chicago and Illinois now. Unfortunately, that gets you to Rod Blagojevich. Should he get his law license back? A panel, even as we speak, is considering whether or not he should be disbarred. You know, if you get disbarred in Illinois, you get disbarred for 5 years. You can apply for reinstatement of your law license within 5 years.
But weren't they trying to take his away for life?
I did not. Boy, I just spoke to a spokesperson about this yesterday, and they didn't mention that.
Okay.
About 10 to 15 people do lose their law license each year.
10 of them were in the legislature.
I think the bigger question is Blagojevich has a spokesperson? What is happening?
Right.
No, that was for the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission.
Got it.
And they're the ones that are actually making the case against the president in front of this panel. So they're now trying to decide.
My knee-jerk reaction is, Yeah, he should have it taken away. If you commit a crime,
knee jerk. Of course, he should have it taken away.
I mean, I know. I was just trying to think. Okay, well, could he practice some other kind of law where he wasn't in front of a court or
real estate
someone?
Law,
bird law?
I don't know.
Really, bird law. How much damage can he do?
My knee jerk reaction is sort of: should he have his law license? He broke the law. He was convicted of breaking the law. I know he doesn't think that he broke the law. As he's been telling people, he was a...
I'm returning home today from a long exile, a freed political prisoner.
He's a freed political prisoner. You get convicted, you're done.
By the way, the rules by which the commission operates, they're not interested in his arguments. They say, we take it as a given that he was convicted twice. He went to jail. So he can say whatever he wants to try and repair his image. That's his Twitter handle now. But they're not interested in that. They're simply saying, as a result of that, that's the starting point. What should the consequence be? Did you disgrace yourself or the profession? Did you demonstrate that you're unfit because of your honesty issues?
He didn't go to jail. He went to jail for corruption. He didn't go to jail. There's no legal.
It's a crime.
No, I understand that. But
you think corruption reflects on your honesty?
But I don't know if any of it had to do with the fact that he has a law license or not. That's the only thing I would suggest would be the dissenting opinion why can't a convicted felon who has been let out of jail go into a different
Because you rely job. On the bar being honest, and he has proven his dishonesty.
Yeah. You're just right. Playing. I'm imagining right? if I was charged. Yeah, right. Yeah, what's the standard for lawyer honesty? But yeah, if I'm being charged with a crime that I didn't commit, and my prosecution is Rod Blagojevich, like, can we debase the profession anymore? So, like, I think if it's a 5-year, if it's a suspension or something, that's a normal thing that they do. I think it totally makes sense to take it away. I don't know if I'd be for a lifelong ban, which I did see someone talking about, just because if a person makes a mistake, I don't think they should be relegated, out of really any profession for the rest of their life. People can change.
I feel that way about athletes sometimes that make a mistake and we say, okay, what's the point of never letting Michael Vick play football again? That's his profession and better that he have a chance to earn income and pay taxes. I'm wondering what the occupations are that Blagojevich could apply for, or say he were an attorney. What kind of clients would he attract?
He's a history buff. He could teach history. You know, he could teach history. He could teach politics.
Poetry.
Poetry.
The three things upon which, though, they are citing are his appointing a United States senator to fill in the vacancy created by Barack Obama, soliciting $25,000 in campaign contributions from the chief executive of the Children's Memorial Hospital. That's famous, and $100,000 in campaign contributions from the racetrack owner in exchange for enacting legislation for them. So those were the big three. This is the sort of thing you normally do, Austin. I'm looking at documents people have never heard of. It says here, point 26, according to the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, respondent has engaged in the following misconduct. This is why he should lose his license. Criminal acts that reflect adversely on his honesty, trustworthiness, or fitness as a lawyer. And B, engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, misrepresentation by conduct including engaging in wire fraud, attempting to commit extortion, corrupt solicitation, conspiracy to commit extortion, and then all of those fancy words that describe all of those things he did.
Well, if you put it that way, it sounds like an open and shut case.
It
is an open. I think it is. I think this is just one of those pro forma hearings that's going on. And because it happened this was scheduled before Blagojevich was released.
Right.
But because it happened just in the days after he was released, we're paying attention to it like it might be in dispute. You know, I don't think it's in dispute.
Yeah, I would imagine and hope that you are right. This will sound trivial compared to all the things we've talked about so far. Austin said, are we going to talk about the soda tax?
It wasn't exactly the Boston Tea Party, but, you know, people were really angry about the 1 cent sugar-sweetened beverage tax that Tony Preckwinkle passed in 2017.
Tony Taxwinkle.
Taxwinkle.
So clever.
Genius. Just genius wordplay.
I stole that before we came in.
You mean the tax that cost her the mayor's race?
Yes.
So keep going.
It was a big deal, and it was quickly, within months after enormous voter outrage, repealed. And there's a very interesting study that came out recently that said, well, what were the results of this? And we'll all remember that initially Preckwinkle said, hey, this is all about public health. And then she went back and said, hey, actually, we need the money too. And that just made people even more mad.
And what was the tax again? How much was it?
It was 1 cent per ounce of sugar-sweetened beverage.
So 12 cents on a can of soda.
Yeah, something like that.
But certain sweetened beverages.
Right.
Not all of them.
It was weird how there were some carbs.
LaCroix. Yeah.
Anyway, the point is
oh, yeah. Sugary drink consumption dropped during that time by about 25-27%. If you account for people doing, and the other interesting finding was you saw an increase in people getting those drinks across the county border.
So maybe we didn't reduce our consumption, we just drove further to get it.
So even when accounting for driving out, which is interesting in itself, right? The fact that people bought sugar-sweetened beverages outside Cook County.
I'm going to Will County!
Yeah, but
damn it!
No way. They went to Indiana to fill up their tank and
get their firecrackers.
Yeah, right.
So that was, even accounting for that, I think it was about a 20% reduction. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem, though, with these types of studies. On sugar-sweetened beverages, because other places have had these types of taxes, is that you often find people substitute the sugar they get in a drink for something else. Mm. So we're not talking about health. We're just talking about people reducing their soda
consumption. I'm a Cook County resident, and I remember at that time, I said, good, I'm out. I got out of sugary drinks. And that, so I am one of the people who said, this tax is I see what they're doing. I'm not going to pay it, and I'm not going to drink the
soda. But since the motivation is twofold, health and money, I wonder if you would consider that a successful campaign then. We're healthier, but now we lost the revenue, right?
That's the problem with sin taxes is, yeah, what do you want, reduce consumption or the money? It's a problem with cigarettes. WGN did a great investigation on the illegal cigarette market in Chicago, and it's because Chicago taxes cigarettes more than any other city. Now, that's something that a lot of people are proud of, but it also creates a black market effect. I just wish this logic would be applied to other taxes in Illinois. That's all I'm saying.
For instance?
Income, property, sales.
Well, but there's no health component there. I mean,
but
it affects
people's behavior. It affects people's behavior. Maybe when we talk about the fair tax, we should talk about the fact that people making the bracket that would see their taxes hiked are the ones leaving the state fastest. Maybe
that,
we should apply that
true,
language.
I thought it I saw that they, I thought I saw somewhere that the middle class African Americans were the group that were leaving the state fastest. It wasn't upper income people.
If you look at the IRS brackets, the people who are most likely to leave, meaning the biggest gap between the leavers and the incomers, it's people making over $200,000.
So just to belabor that point, then if we do tax the very rich, we're not going to get their money. They're going to leave. It's not going to work that way.
That's what we saw in California and New York.
I will ask you rascals to talk more about the fair tax, the graduated income tax proposal, when Eric Zorn comes back, because Eric and Austin have been engaging in preliminary punches back and forth on this, and I respect both of their opinions.
It's going to be like Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder.
And you will take the position that we should not have a graduated income tax. Eric will take the position that we should, and I will take the position that I don't care as long as my taxes don't go up, that it'll be fair as long as I'm below the wherever the line is.
You guys and your six-figure incomes.
That's another thing about the soda tax, though. Like it was a tax on poor people. Like,
no, exactly. That's
100%.
So, but the poor people are better off now that they're drinking less sugar,
not
right?
necessarily, because they might have substituted it for Snickers.
Does it bother you the word fair, though?
You mean the Pritzker, the graduated tax, calling it fair tax?
Yeah, call it a graduated tax and say we're going to tax the rich more or the six-figure people more because they have more. But I don't know that automatically makes it fair. I mean, at some point, you've got 100% is unfair.
I only hear them calling it. Yeah, it's a marketing tool.
They don't call it that.
You know what? I want to check the ballot now and see what they're calling it. It's a graduated income tax.
We don't know what it'll say on the ballot yet, and I think that's going to be a bit of a fight when it happens.
I want them to at least call it the unfair tax, just to make me happy.
Yeah.
Because 100% is not fair. 99% of your income over a certain threshold is not fair. So that I'm starting from the it's unfair until you get to fair, rather than the other way around.
So if the State Board of Elections is listening, John has an idea.
Yeah, we can draft it.
Free speech at Millennium Park. This is another topic that was very near and dear to Eric Zorn's heart. The judge is temporarily allowing Wheaton College students or anybody else to evangelize in the common areas of the park. What they do is they break Millennium Park anyway into 11 zones, rooms they call them, and in one of those 11 zones you can hand out your literature or evangelize or proselytize or whatever it is you want to do. But that zone is not where the bean is or where the water fountain is. So it's not a popular, convenient place for the people to get out their message. These really nice kids from Wheaton College, Fridays, come into the city and they talk to people about do they want to have a closer relationship to God and atone for their sins. That's literally the kind of language that they use when they come up to you. And if you say no, go away, they let you. The city is worried that as a result of at least this temporary ruling, it'll change the nature of that park. I don't know if it's going to become a bug house square. Is that what they call it?
Yes.
But it's nice that you just go there as a tourist or as a resident, and that's all you get is the bean and the water fountain. You don't put up with that crap. If people are saying crap, if people are saying or doing something, then they're out. They throw them out of the park. Where are you guys on this ruling?
I mean, as a journalist, I think they should. It is taxpayer funded property. They should have a right to exercise the First Amendment. I mean. I find the people who are sort of trying to get me to, well, I won't name any of them, these folks on the sidewalk who are like, sign my petition and give me your credit card. I find them to be a lot worse. And I'll stand up for their right to be able to be out there to do it. Not gladly, but I'll do it.
What's an example of that? Like the feed the children or stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, that's why I didn't want to say it. I don't want to belittle those organizations, but I am ticked off at them for putting sort of kids out there to sort of do this. And, you know, they're doing it to busy people, working people who are not going to have time to do it.
I'm a member of the Humane Society for that very reason. Mm-hmm. In and out. I finally gave in. I was going in and out of my grocery store. And finally I said, oh, all right, give me the damn button. And I'm in.
Don't say that publicly. It just encourages this behavior.
Yeah, you're going to note that. Yeah, you're telling them there's a way to be worn down. And
do
now
you admire the tenacity of those
100%,
people?
100%, especially on days like today, or like in the last
miserable
week.
Work. Yeah, some of them are out there all the time.
I think that ruling was a total win for free speech.
Yes,
I think it's great. And I think the last time we talked about this, my essential point was stop trying to make downtown Chicago the suburbs. There's lots of different interesting people.
Absolutely.
And that should be celebrated. And yeah, is it a little bit annoying if they keep coming up to you and harassing you? Yes. But there's a line at which they can't cross that's established in other places of the law. I mean,
right.
People can't be harassing you. They can't be selling all sorts of different things.
Right.
If they want to talk to you about their beliefs, you know, God bless them.
It's baloney that I think it's a waste of taxpayer dollars that went to the courts. I mean, I just it's ridiculous. I'm sorry, I feel passionately about the First Amendment. Past mayoral administrations have tried to sort of curb this kind of stuff. And I walked through City Hall one day, and there was an activist in there, and he grabbed my attention. And one of former Mayor Rahm Emanuel's security people had stopped him because he had been very outspoken when the mayor was getting into his car at something. And he said, I'm not doing anything but walking through here. Can you help me? I know I've seen you. And so I was like, well, what's going on? Well, this security person said, well, he's a troublemaker. And he said, I need to see his ID. Now I need to see yours. And I said, I don't know what this is about, but I'm not going to give you my ID. I'm not going to give you anything. This is the first floor of City Hall. It's used as sort of a pedway in cold weather. Well, that's what I was doing. I was going back to the Daily Center press office.
So that you entertained this inquiry from this person. You've got to show your ID.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like that person should as well. I don't understand. What have they done wrong?
I said, did he do something? I mean, there's police right over here. If he did something, why don't you have them come over and arrest him? The guy is outspoken. He was at the Blagojevich stuff, and he's everywhere. And I appreciate him because, you know what, people like that, the folks who shut down Lakeshore Drive, yes, it may be annoying, but they are people, too, who help keep the First Amendment, the doors open. So I appreciate him. But, yeah, I think there have been past mayoral administrations. I think they're king, and, we're not going to tolerate any of this dissent. I don't like this.
Think about all the other things Chicago police could be doing rather than walking around Millennium Park trying to see if anyone's talking about their faith or some issue that they care about, right?
I mean, I felt that way a little bit when the acting police chief was here and there was two or three other police officers that were with him, like bodyguards or his guys, his detail. Mm-hmm. And he looked like he was really enjoying that. And I thought, what a miserable task to be guarding the police chief, or even the mayor for that matter. Maybe it's a plum job and those guys like it, but I wouldn't like that. I don't know what I want to do if I'm a cop. I don't know what the detail is I'd most enjoy, but driving that guy around and handing him a piece of paper doesn't strike me as why I went to the academy.
There was a lot of good reporting on Chicago, former Chicago mayors getting security details, CPD security details, right?
And does Rahm have that?
I think he's just ended, maybe, I want to say, but he had one.
He had one, but Mayor Daley still has his.
And Ed Burke had one for a very long time.
Really? What do they do, the security detail, then?
They're glorified.
I'm a driver, right?
You're a driver,
Yeah.
Your chauffeur.
Should anything happen. And then there was a recent controversy about the city treasurer, I believe, wanting to have kind of armed guards
right.
with her at all times because people went up to her and saying her argument was
you're the money.
Yeah, exactly. You have all the money. Yeah. You have all the money, and she felt uncomfortable with that.
By the way, just one thing about city officials. I was talking to an assistant state's attorney for Collar County, not Cook County, the other day. We were taught they had heard my conversation with the editorial page editor of the Chicago Sun-Times, who was describing why they had endorsed Kim Fox. And this attorney was telling me how she rolled her eyes at that interview, and she's screaming at the radio, Cook County, do your job. You people who have all of these cases that you are just dismissing because you don't have the resources or the work ethic to just do your job, put people in jail, prosecute cases. The number of times where people's cases get dismissed just because they don't do their job is legend in their field. She said the joke is if you've got a body and you find it near the Cook County line with another county, drag it into the other county because they'll get prosecuted there. But in Cook County, forget about it. Your chances are nil. It blew her mind that Kim Fox might get reelected.
I will say I'm happy now how much scrutiny and how much attention is being paid to that office, because it really, in terms of like the intersection of policy with your day-to-day life, it kind of matters more than any other elected office.
Yeah.
Really, it's justice. I would be a little bit hesitant in terms of stones and glass houses with Collar County state's attorneys talking about how bad mm-hmm. County is. It's a degree question, but the amount of prosecutorial misconduct in the Collar counties over the years, one of the most famous cases, the Nicarico murders,
oh, yeah.
where multiple men were wrongly put on death row for years and years and years and years, was as a result of a Collar County state's attorney's race and a person not wanting to appear soft on crime. So he threw a bunch of these Latino guys on death row. That case and the overturning of that case led to the elimination of the death penalty in Illinois.
George Ryan was the governor when that happened, right? And so we have the death penalty, but it's a moratorium on it in Illinois. Is that the way it stands?
We don't have the death penalty. There's a moratorium
right.
on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was Pat Quinn's, one of his big accomplishments.
That's let me see if I get the name right now. That was Austin Berg. Justin Kaufman left. Justin sometimes sits next to Austin.
We'll make sure that doesn't happen again.
And I'm Lisa Donovan.
Yeah. Heather Sharone could not join us today. Steve Bertrand did. He had to exit stage left, too. I'm John Williams. We are the Mincing Rascals. And that wraps it up for this week. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify. Or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.